We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Halloween.
Welcome to Lore Keepers. Wow. Hey, this is difficult when I can't look at the script and also talk as directly into the mic as I'd like. Welcome to Halloumé. This is Lore Keepers, the Boundless Venture. It's a world-renowned podcasting opus wherein the richest tapestry of lore in human history is sung into being before your very ear holes. Now, those sound like some very large claims to make, but what can we say? It's just completely true, 100%. I'm Frank, as you well know.
I'm Carter, as you may not well know.
And whether you melt jewelry in volcanoes, burn steel to usurp the Carrion Throne, or crit on your Grey Warden to, I don't know, level up to 99 woodcutting, I've got RuneScape on the brain these days, sit a while by our fire, a weary wanderer, and let us weave you a tale.
A tale as old as time.
You know, it's as old as time as you doing that bit. It's
it
very
is.
Good.
Yeah.
It's very good. listener, if I am talking very quietly, and it's hard to hear my voice or I sound super intimate, I apologize for the difference in recording. My partner has office hours on a Sunday, which is, she shouldn't have to. I'm not sure why she is, but there
At
you
least
go.
It's this early in the morning.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, I guess it is like 11 now.
Well,
what's the joke? Is there a joke? 11 is almost noon, dude.
It's early for me.
It's like lunchtime. Oh, do you not normally get up this early?
I don't know. I don't know anymore. I think it's the
daylight savings.
The daylight savings. Joke. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude. I was not to fall into old habits. We've completely buried the desire to do a preamble, like as part of the official recording. If you really want to listen to that shit, we talk about Legends of Runeterra and Hearthstone. You can check that out in the preamble, like at the end of the episode. But yeah, dude, I was actually doing some work yesterday, late at night, because we have an app that basically just needs to run for several hours, and it just automatically produces geometry for us that we need. Yeah, I mean, it's nifty. It's also, I don't know, it's imperfect, but it needed to run. And so I was up until 4 a.m. I didn't realize I was actually up until 3 a.m. But in order to, you know, to kind of get it to run, there was some attention that was need to be given and stuff. And so, yeah, I was up super late, and actually like was awake through the jump and didn't realize it.
Didn't have that moment where time froze and rewound an hour and you're like, what have I done?
No, this isn't fucking Clock Stoppers. this... Did you ever see that movie? It was like we can't... Whatever. It's a dumb Nickelodeon, I think, made for TV movie.
I figured out what the title is now, but at first I thought you said Clock Stompers.
Clock Stompers.
I just imagine these, like, you know, brutal looking kids, you know, with like sideless t-shirts, you know, the classic sideless t-shirts.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just like getting grandfather clocks, just like stomping on them on the curb.
Do you think if there was a band called Clock Stompers that they would be ska or punk?
I'm thinking punk.
I think it's ska. The idea of like clock stomping, like, you know, pick it up, you know, stomping to time or whatever. I don't know. Very, very energetic music.
All right. Well.
So,
speaking of energetic
music, that You know, yeah, if you think about it, ska is kind of like a weird, like, backwaters of music, you know, kind of just goes in its own direction. Speaking of going in its own direction, this is going so well.
This is our One Direction podcast.
Oh, my God. No, so this week, I don't know if we mentioned this on air previously, but one of the things we've kind of been thinking about and exploring is that Tencent as an island is larger than just the city of Padasari, right? So Padasari is the city on the island of Tencent. There's like a volcano that's also known as, you know, Tencent. And we've talked about the far side of the island. And in the past, we've kind of also explored like, oh, what are some of the other resources or things that would be happening elsewhere in the island? You know, you might have some, you know, lumber mills and things, you know, some forests. Maybe there's some pasteurization. You definitely have your giant bats. You got to milk the giant bats.
And, you know, make sure they're rideable, crack the whip, all that.
Hey, did we look up what bat guano was actually used for?
Yeah, it's used for like gunpowder and
gunpowder. That's what it was. Yeah, I was trying to remember what made it so valuable during like the post Enlightenment era.
Yep.
Anyways, so Padasari is a big city, right? It's about 50,000 people. We think. I don't remember what we settled on. I do remember us settling on a much larger number than we initially thought because the people who say that cities were not big were partially true and also totally wrong. Like during the Middle Ages, like there, if you actually, I can add something to the podcast description about like, but there's this really cool article that is just like, hey, sizes of cities throughout history. And there's like ones from the Bronze Age that have like almost 1 million people. And it's like, okay, so this clearly,
yeah, they this just is get really big and then there's a plague and then everyone dies.
Yeah. I mean, there's tons of cities that had hundreds of thousands of people, like all the time. That happened a lot. And so it is not crazy to have a city with 50,000 people, you know? Yeah. Anyways, but there would any city of that size needs to be supported by other satellites, right? And yes, obviously a lot of that stuff is going to be happening through trade and through like, you know, port cities, but you know, cities like that need specialization from local areas. And so what we were talking about was, well, what are some of the other towns that would be on the island of Tencent? So this week we're going to explore one of those. So kind of it's almost like a season three within a season three kind of vibes. We're focusing on a city that relates to the city that we are focusing the entire season on.
Maybe it's more of a township.
Yes. And I mean, I think to start out, I'm imagining this thing is no larger than maybe 4,000 people, but even that seems kind of like a stretch. Like it might be closer to 1,500 to 3 is kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's like Stoke-upon-Trent.
Stoke-upon-Trent?
Stoke-upon-Trent.
Is that an English city that you particularly like the name of?
I do, yes. What's the population of Stoke-upon-Trent?
Probably more than 4,000 people.
What do you think? 256,000.
Here's the thing. I bet that 300 years ago, Stoke-upon-Trent was a small town of like maybe 1,500 people or something. England, dude, the entirety of the British Isles is twice the size of Ohio.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty
small. It's literally just two Ohios stacked up.
Except, you know, probably better than Ohio.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Without question. I'm just saying, like, if you really want to fuck with your sense of, like, scale, Ohio is, I don't know. I mean, it is. It feels like it's about 1/50th of the size of the U.S. It's the kind of, well, maybe bigger than that. It might be close to, like, maybe 1/30th or something. But, like, I don't know. It's just weird to, like, look at state politics versus state, like the amount of mental, like cultural space that a state occupies in the mind. Like I think about, you know, growing up in the Twin Cities and being surrounded by Minnesota and Ohio are kind of comparable in size. And so it's like the equivalent of the entirety of Great Britain. Wait, question, is Great Britain different from England or is that the same thing? Does Great Britain include Scotland and Ireland and everything?
I think Great Britain might include Scotland. I don't know if it includes
Okay.
Ireland, because Great Britain might be the Isle.
I'll just say good old England, you know, like it's like the entirety of England is, it's got a population of probably 50 million or something?
It's a lot.
I don't know. It's a lot. Anyways, I'm getting off track here. I think all of that was just to say, yeah, states are fucking weird, man. When you steal somebody's land, you get so much of it. And the entirety of English growth was just on that one tiny island. You can fit a lot of people into a small space.
Also, I can't find the population of Stoke-upon-Trent, which is a town close to Stoke-on-Trent. Very different.
Yeah, no, there's some ridiculous names. There's like West Balsing or something. There's some very ridiculous.
Already ridiculous.
Birmingham is fine.
Bath's a good one.
We gotta refocus here. So all right, so we're focusing on this one small town. We just before we started like the podcast proper, Carter and I were kind of talking about the idea of maybe it being specialized or something. But I don't know. For starters, yeah, where do we begin with this one? What do you want to do with this town? How does it serve Padasadi? I think specialization might be a good way to approach it. And so we could explore what it specifically specializes in. Like maybe all the shipwrights are there, or the lumber and logging is there, or, you know. What's up?
I think it's dominated by fruit.
It's a town that's dominated by fruit plantations?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Where it is a town set up to where there's a great deal of land area around it dedicated to growing.
It's like a lot of orchards nearby.
Exactly. So most of the town is out there picking fruit.
Okay.
Because it requires a lot of labor to pick some of this fruit.
I am not against that idea. I think the one thing I would say is let's just, if we're going to settle on that one, let's figure out what makes it interesting from a Padasadi level. I don't necessarily, for instance, like the one that I was gravitating towards before was like shipbuilding, but I don't think necessarily that shipbuilding by itself is like evokes the sort of the feeling of Padasadi.
Two words.
What are the two words?
Banana wine.
Okay.
There you go.
How is that evoking the spirit of Padasadi here?
It's a spirit of staying together, community, spirit of revelry.
That's any life. Wine. That's any wine. Okay.
It can't just be wine. That's boring. It's gonna be fancy fruit.
I'm not like against bananas. Yeah, bananas, crazy fancy. I mean, okay, actually, you could argue that they are fancy, and that the only reason we have access to them now is because of the globalization of the market. I don't know. I think I'm more just meant like, is there anything pseudo magical going on, or, you know, maybe what is its relationship to the tidelings or to the giant bats that we have, or, you know, what makes it critical to the economy? I think that's the thing, is like an island or a town like this that is this specialized can only exist because Padasadi needs it to exist. I mean, banana wine could be enough on its own to justify that. I think the idea of banana wine, which is ridiculous, being one of the things that it does is, you know, because it's specialized in fruit, makes a lot of sense. And you got to prevent that scurvy, you know?
Yeah.
But like, I want to know, you got to sell me on like what exactly justifies this town being here instead of all of these fruit people. Like, what is so important about this fruit that they couldn't either A, get it from the farmer, or B, get it from the merchants nearby?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It is a farming town. So it's a town insofar as everyone's a farmer, basically.
Yeah. All right. So first of all, you probably wouldn't live in town if you were a farmer. You live in town if you're a craftsperson, and you go to town regularly if you're a farmer, because otherwise you don't have enough space to reach your fields. Only the people who like have their fields right next to the town would.
Well, they don't own their own fucking town fields. That's what all the bigwigs in Padasadi own them. And then they just have this big fucking, basically solid expanse of housing surrounded by growing field.
Okay. What makes this different from the other towns that are, that there might be a couple other towns that are of comparable size that are like near Padasadi, like a half day's travel?
Maybe they're the only one with license to grow this fruit, or maybe they produce the best of the banana wines. Or maybe there's a specific kind of fruit they also grow.
So you're saying they're not even special enough that they're the only people who produce the banana wine? There's also other... All I'm saying is that there probably are other satellite towns, and some of them definitely have farmers. Either, yes, this is the only place that grows the specific fruit that they then turn to banana wine and stuff. So, bananas. Or they, you know, those other towns are hyper-specific in their own thing and nobody else is growing the fruit. I'm not saying that these are, like, that makes sense on a real-world level. I'm saying, like, what makes it flavorful for Padasadi?
I feel like maybe you should tell me.
Okay, I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to be difficult here. I just mean, like, why are we talking about this town and not any of the other towns? You know, instead of just lumping them all together and saying these towns do these things.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I'm not sure.
Okay, yeah, no, I know. I'm being really difficult here.
You know, obviously, what do bats eat, Frank?
I guess they would eat fruit.
They would.
Ooh, okay. So because we've already established, as ridiculous as it is, bat milk definitely seems to be a critical aspect of the Padasadi economy. It actually matters. Growing boys need their bat milk, and you know, it's used for, maybe it keeps really well at sea or something. And so it provides valuable nutrition.
Milk is kind of hard to keep, and I don't think there's a lot of land for cattle growing or grazing.
Yeah, maybe bats, I mean, maybe land. Maybe these bats actually travel to nearby islands they fly, and so they roost on Padasadi, but they actually can range farther out, and that enables the ranchers, the banchers, the bat ranchers to I do like the idea, though, that a lot of the fruit is used to cultivate or to feed the bats and to get them the bat milk, because I think bats do eat a lot of fruit, right?
Depends on the kind of bat, but yeah, fruit bats eat a lot of fruit.
Makes sense. I really like the idea of, like, you have old Bessie and she's just hanging upside down, and a farmer just leaves a massive trough of just like so many bananas or whatever. I love the idea that this also flavors the milk. Like, they get different proteins or whatever, different amino acids to like come out. And so like maybe they ferment the bat milk. Maybe that's where some of the banana wine stuff comes from.
Batty
milk wine.
Batty milk wine with extra banana flavor.
Okay, in honor of like ridiculous British names, you know that Batty Milkwine is like somebody who went to primary school with somebody who is
with Winston, like
with Churchill. That's exactly where I was going.
Winston Churchill.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I actually like this idea. And there's probably definitely died in a duel. There's probably some, like, you know, we can kind of see what specific things, you know, make this town interesting, like what stories it has or whatever in the future. But I do like the idea that it's part of this like critical aspect of the economy that we already know exists. Also, Frank, write this down. Other islands nearby Padasadi that are like satellite islands, that could be interesting, like that are close enough that you might, you know, be able to row a boat out to them or something.
Are you thinking like the college one, or do you think that's farther away?
Oh, I think the college is days away. Like, you'd have to sail to it. I'm thinking more like you might be able to see it from the shore. Tiny little, you know, I mean, you know, some of them might not be more than just a rocky outcropping where a bunch of birds, you know, migrate and shit on it. Yeah, and maybe like give birth to their. But I like the idea of there being like a small couple islands where maybe one person owns one and they have like a huge mansion and they're like some mysterious figure, stuff like that. Anyways, But focusing back on this small town. All right, so you've established that they are fruit farmers. And you said plantation. Were you thinking full on like plantation where a lot of people who work there don't own it and it's not family run, it is like industrious?
Oh yeah.
Maybe enslaving?
I don't know about enslaving, but it's definitely like some big wig in Parasari owns it.
Okay.
Like maybe, you know, 200 years ago, it was, you know, just families. But mm-hmm. like it's since, as the city's gotten bigger, people are like, you know, I can make this 10 times as productive and make me so much gold I couldn't even carry it. I can't.
I think I'll meet you halfway on this one. What if it was a situation where one big wig owns a massive portion of like the farms and stuff, and the first time that they did this, the rest of the people who live there like resolutely decided, like, they're like, we're not going to let any other people from Potosotic try and take this land. And like, so there's probably like 40 or 50% of it is all just one massive plantation. I mean, which also creates complicated dynamics of like some of the people work for our friends of people who are just the farmers, and the one plantation can definitely undercut all the others. And it's kind of like, if they don't band up together, then they could easily get wiped out. So there's like a very strong thread of like people tied together from these family owned farms.
They're unionizing, Frank.
Well, they're not. I mean, I don't know if they would be unionizing as much as it's just like they're, it's like an us versus them. But also, they might have friends or family that work for this plantation owner because of, you know, whatever reason, or they like might make friends, or maybe they don't. You know, maybe a lot of that workforce comes from Potosotti, like people who are looking for work. And so they're seen as kind of like outsiders, and that might actually be like a thoroughly divided town where you have some pubs that you're just like not, you know, like you wouldn't be welcome in if you're working for, like, as essentially like a scab, you know, and others where you are more welcome because that's where all the scabs hang out. And the scabs, well, I mean, they're not really even scabs, but just like the plantation workers aren't necessarily bad people. They just are, you know, looking for a job, and this is what was available to them. But still doesn't change the fact that the local families might be very suspicious of them.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like Amazon workers. It's not really their fault.
Yeah.
And they're not treated particularly well by the company, yeah. So.
There is at no point where I ever feel ire towards the people working for Amazon who are like floor workers or like they're responsible for any of the evil that Amazon, you know, it's not even to a level where like, oh, well, they're complicit in it. No, man, they're fucking victims of it. They typically only have that job because there's literally no other work that like will hire them and, you know, pay them well enough if what they get paid can even be called close to well enough. But, you know, it might be better than some of the other jobs that they have. Anyways. Yeah. Okay. So kind of like this picture also. Yeah, the thing is if we wanted to look at the family oriented version of this small town, we just jump back a while.
Yes,
you know, like we just go back in time. And I mean, maybe we jump forward in time and the plantation owners win, you know, and the moment that we happen to be talking about is just like, you know, one snapshot of time.
Yeah, there's just a bunch of robots picking fruit now.
Right. Yeah, just a bunch of just a bunch of constructs or something. Hang on one second. I want to see if Rachel is still in office hours. What else? I mean, where else should we go with this? I feel like, you know, we have a good idea of, you know, we've got these farms. You know, they probably extend, I don't know, half a day's journey away.
Probably.
You can't have it much further than that because anybody who needs to bring their fruit into town. Yeah, I mean, are they bringing their fruit into town? Are they selling it from there? Is there maybe like a merchant or two who walks that route from the town to Potosotti proper? So like they sell it in town?
I definitely think that for the big farm, Big Wig's farm, he definitely has like couriers and he's got to deal with a merchant.
Oh, yeah. He's got his own infrastructure that just goes to the plantation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there might be, yeah, there's probably a couple of squares where, you know, within this small town, where maybe even just one, although with a town like 3,000 to 4,000 people, that's enough to have multiples. But yeah, no, I think it's big enough where there's like a few different places where you might do deals with merchants to bring the stuff in. However, I think there you might also just have ranchers who. Okay, I was thinking maybe the ranchers fly in on bat mounts to pick up like a certain amount of fruit each day, but that's not really how farms work. I do like the idea of ranchers flying to different farms to see who they're going to buy from this season, though. You have like a season of harvest where the farmers all kind of prepare their wares at their home. You know, they might make jams and wines and things from this, and it's like, here's this season's, you know, whatever this is. And you have like sort of a parade of visiting ranchers from all over the place who are like flying in and landing with their bats and getting off, and then just like, I don't know, like a bizarre farmer's table kind of thing going on.
Yeah. And I think we can talk a bit more about like what the farmers actually do. And maybe it's like, I think there's a festival. So In my mind, I think there's like a growing season where they have to like tend to the trees and like make sure they're pollinating properly and all this stuff.
As a Floridian, can you tell me, do tropical trees grow their fruit all year round? Or is it still on an annual cycle?
I don't know.
Like orange trees.
Where I'm from, orange trees would die.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a frost line because if it ever goes below freezing, the orange tree.
Yeah, that's right. There's a you're on the panhandle.
Yeah. So I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
But in any case, we can say that there is a kind of cycle.
Okay.
And you know, the trees require a lot of maintenance prior to, you know, the kind of harvesting time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're very busy, and then once harvesting comes around, you know, they gather it all up, and then there's I think an interim period where there can be some festivities, and also this is also I think where it's focus on the winemaking happens, because now they have a small break where they're like, okay, we don't have to prepare the trees just yet,
yeah,
we don't have to harvest, so we can make the wine, and then there's like a wine festival,
yeah, which. I don't know if it would technically be wine or more like mead, because I think mead is created from
honey.
Fruit.
Mead is honey.
Oh, is it honey?
Mm-hmm.
But honey doesn't ferment.
No. Well, I mean, it's honey based. I don't know if you mean like, it's not just honey. It's like honey and other stuff. But...
Okay. Because I think that mead is essentially fruit wine. I could be wrong on that, but I thought that it was like, you can use like apricots and...
I think mead often has fruit in it, but... I think the thing that makes mead is the honey. I don't know if you ever had mead, but it's incredibly calorically
I've had mead, yeah. It's, you do ferment honey with water. Sometimes with various fruits, spices, grains, or hops. So actually, I guess you can use kind of anything to make it. But it sounds like it is honey is...
The bees.
Is the key there. Okay, interesting.
I know this.
I don't know if that would be whatever we want to call it. I mean, I just don't think it'd be wine. I think it's more like mead. Because I don't think there's a lot of fruit wines aside from wine. Like wine's whole thing is that it's specifically made from vin, you know, grapes.
But I mean, you know, what happens if you stomp a banana and stick it in a barrel with some yeast or whatever?
You make some alcoholic beverage, but it's not wine, because wine specifically is associated with the grape, vin.
Never had pear wine?
Pear wine is made with grapes and pears.
Really?
Yeah.
Never had pear wine.
Yeah. In order for something to be called wine, it's like the whole bourbon or like whiskey kind of thing is like there's specific things that are required in it to make it. So maybe they also have grapes. My point is it doesn't matter.
Maybe it's banana beer.
I that sounds great.
You would drink a nice cold glass of banana beer on a Sunday afternoon.
Uh-huh. I think you're right, though. I think that it is. I really like the idea of, I mean, maybe they harvest fruit from these trees twice a year. You know, maybe. We could do that. But I think that there is a definite
There's
cycle.
There's some downtime. There's some downtime.
Yeah.
It's cyclical.
And during that time, they create products from the, like, I do think that jams and jellies are definitely part of it. I think... The fruit itself also, of course, just gets harvested. There's not like, I don't know if there's really any way of doing preservation beyond drying things. So maybe they make fruit jerky. So maybe like when the fruit anagram. Is fresh, it's what?
Maybe it's an anagram of banana. Maybe it's like Nabara or Nabana.
Sabanam?
Sabanam. Get your Sabanam beer.
You're saying the drink?
Or maybe the fruit. Maybe it's not bananas. Maybe it just looks like bananas and sounds like bananas, but we call it Nabas.
Nabas. Really quick on the subject of bananas, is that the only fruit that they grow, or do they grow other stuff too?
I think it's like that's what they're known for. So like, oh, it's the banana town.
Okay,
but they probably grow some other stuff.
I think that this is part of the whole like.
It's like
depending
when
on the season, you might have different things harvesting. So you might have like oranges or peaches or something.
But you know, when you think Firenze, Frank.
I mean, Santa Maria Novella, or the Florence Cathedral.
I mean, products? No.
Steak? Are you thinking of like Florentian steak?
Leather.
Oh, okay. Florence sure. I did not leather. Know where you were going with that, dude. When I think of Florence, when
Florence
I think of Firenze,
when
I think of Firenze, I think about fucking the buildings.
You think about Duomo?
Yeah, yeah, I do.
It's a fucking nice dome.
Brunelleschi.
What a Bruno, that Brunelleschi. When you think about banana village,
yeah.
You think about
I think
bananas.
You're right. Yes, I think that the majority of the banana, like the, I wonder if the plantation guy actually took over the majority of what was the best banana fields, and so like, or is able to mass produce bananas, but like maybe the quality stuff comes from the other people.
I think I know what we need, Frank.
What do we need?
We need a dome.
A dome?
Yep, a duomo.
What do you mean?
We just need it. We need a big building, big banana building. Fancy.
Let's
up.
Just. No, I do like the idea of there being a beautiful cathedral-esque, like you know, kind of one nice temple. Oops.
Not dedicated to some archaic banana god, but to like, maybe it's Gade.
Well, there might be a few different ones that are worshipped and recognized in town, but there might be like one specific god that is the most common for people to patron. I could see that.
Yeah, that's what I think. And maybe it is like, you know, I don't think we made a stone. Maybe it's like famously made of this banana wood. Like they chopped down old trees that don't make anymore and they made it out of the banana wood. And so it like smells like bananas. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe it's that very distinctive like color.
So I know that we talked about there was like sort of a concrete or a cement or something that was made out of the phosphor, not phosphorescent, but the coral. Yeah, like that. It. Yeah, and it's not bioluminescent either. I think it's just
spermlescent.
No, it's pearlescent is the word I was thinking of. Pearlescent. Yeah, and they like grind it up and turn it into something. That can become like a semi-translucent glass, right? Like that's one of the things they can do out of it.
I think
can kind of blow it.
I think they grind it up and then they mix it with sand and they blow it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has.
Maybe it becomes made out of stone at some point in the future. Like it gets rebuilt or something. Let's say it burns down at some point. Maybe like
fire.
At the end of some like big arc with this, you know, when tensions are really high, and or maybe it causes the tensions to be really high. Because they think like either the plantation owner or like and their cronies or, you know, the farmers like burned it down in their ire, you know, and eventually gets rebuilt. But I think that it is, yeah, built out of wood initially. I like that idea.
The banana baron and his cronies.
The Nanner Naren.
Oh, no.
Naria
Nanner.
Yes, I like this. Actually, while we're on the subject of town proper, real quick. So probably some taverns, pubs.
Yep, you gotta showcase the banana beer.
You get some inns. What other kind of facilities or like work is needed to support the farmers? Like, you got probably a couple of blacksmiths who can make you know, necessary farming implements.
Yeah.
We gotta stop calling them like farms. They're not farms. They're orchards. I just don't know what you call a person who an orchardier. What do you call a person who owns or works at an orchard?
Farmhand. Orchard hand. Orchard hand.
Do you call a person who works in orchard? An orchardist. Orchardist? That's...
Orchard hand.
That's ridiculous.
The old O hands.
Yeah, orchardist. All right, I guess they're orchardists. They're not farms,
though. They farm orchards.
They farm orchards. That is not what's going on.
So what's going on? Okay. They have a hoe and they're like digging at a tree.
I mean, the kind of work that you'd actually do on an orchard, you would be planting some trees, but mostly it would be harvesting.
It would be harvesting. And it would be pruning trees. It'd be checking the tree's health, pruning, fertilizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I don't really know what kind of work. I mean, I think yes to all of that.
Pollination, I think.
But like, what's a day-to-day? What's the day-to-day work of an orchard?
I guess just
making sure they stay healthy, yeah, right?
I think it's just there's so many fucking trees. And I think their pollination is important if you don't have natural pollinators as
well. You know what would want to eat those and corrupt the trees, right? Aphids and shit.
Yeah.
Who eats aphids?
Bats. No.
Mm-hmm.
Do they?
Yep. Yep. I think that bats are actually bats. Well, maybe they employ bat roosts where they have like it's like a separate sub industry where they're much, much smaller. These aren't giant bats. These are like a pygmy or something.
They're regular sized bats, in other words.
Yeah, and they're allowed to eat a certain amount of the fruit, but like they're let out from their roost at night to go and kill, like eat all of the bugs. And so you have these like black swarms that come out at like dusk. Like with all the chittering. I actually really like that idea.
Frank, I just had a brilliant idea as well. It's a little bit off topic, but it's worth visiting. So bats, you reminded me just now, are nocturnal, famously.
Yep.
So there's some, they do train some bats to be active during the day, and they wear fucking cute goggles.
Okay.
Specifically the giant bats.
We have to figure that one out. I do like the idea that they're specialized and they need to be trained to be out during the day. Oh my God, it adds so much flavor that these sort of like celebrations, these, you know, beginning of this, the harvest season celebrations that, you know, where they're trying to invite the ranchers to come over, are definitely happening. They start at dusk and they go all night. Yeah. And so it's like, it completely flips everyone's like time scales. I love the idea of it being sort of just like, imagine, okay, this picture sounds so nice, mostly because the pandemic is still raging and eventually we'll get there, but like, not for a little bit. Imagine though, a cool summer night.
Okay.
Imagining. It is, you know, it is kind of humid, but it's not swelteringly so. Most of the humidity has burned off during the day. And there's a nice breeze, and it's definitely like full on night. A lot of the bats are active, but
how many sisters are up?
Two. We'll say there's two. Two of the sisters are visible, and one of them's waning. She's just a sliver. But like, the bats are somewhere farther off in the orchard. You know, you can hear their chittering like from far away. Like it's just kind of ambient noise. Several ranchers have already like left. And so you kind of have this downtime where you and your family and your like some other families who are part of that same farm are just kind of chilling and just shooting the shit between y'all as you wait for sort of the next ranchers to come.
Couple mugs beer deep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You're sipping on that banana beer. Maybe you're eating some like really tasty nutty bread or something.
Oh, banana bread, banana pie.
Uh-huh. Lots of banana, all sorts of banana food. And yeah, and like really that is what that is that those all of those products, they don't necessarily like that's an aspect of, you know, what their orchards do, these orchidists. But ultimately, it's kind of more like when, you know, a company that is trying to get to close a sale with another company, like make a business transaction, is like buying them lunch and shit. It's like that, you know, they're making all of these pies and things of like delicious stuff just to woo the ranchers over to how tasty their bananas are. Yeah, I fucking love this. This is great. Holy shit. Okay, so we've got, I don't know, I feel like we're probably closing in here. What else do we want to do with this? Is there, I feel like it's not quite a one in one, but there might be like one or two more facets we want to explore before that. Is there anything specifically that you wanted to investigate a little bit more?
I think we should look at the festival. Maybe like a harvest time festival, like once all the harvest time is finished,
mm-hmm.
and there's like a small celebration prior to the beginning of like the fermenting and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is like, so this is like, maybe you get a bit of the products. There's probably not a lot of banana beer yet.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just banana related activities.
Yes, I love the idea of there being like games and things that people are playing. Also, yeah, you might have people's sleep schedules definitely flip flop throughout the year. And so like this is the point where like, as the festival times like kind of come on, you're staying up later in the day to kind of get ready for the fact that maybe this is the hottest part of the year. I guess that would actually make sense if you're harvesting, right? Like as the hottest part of the year comes on, that's when the fruit is going to want to be the most ripe. And so you're sleeping through the heat of the day. And then like around, you know, 4 or 5 p.m. is when you wake up to start to get things ready. You might have like a small quiet meal with your family. And then that's when you start to like, you know, do the preps for the
Frank, festival. I've got the best idea for the festival. You ready?
Yeah, what's up?
So there's like the main street is kind of cordoned off and people are kind of milling around there a little bit. But there's this one section of the main street that no one's allowed to go into. It's roped off. And as you're watching the festival, you see people are, you know, like just eating bananas and they toss the peels into this area.
Okay.
And it's a very long area and it's, you know, maybe only like 15 feet wide, but it's like 100 feet long.
Okay.
And as we're, you know, as they go on, more and more banana peels fill this area. And at the end of the festival to finish things off on a bang, there's a foot race through the banana peel field. Yes.
Okay. I fucking love it. Holy shit. And that is so delightful.
Do you know what the prize is, Frank?
What?
The top five people, the people that cross the finish line, first, second, third, fourth, and fifth, get to be the taste testers for the next festival's banana beer contest.
Oh, they don't have to do any work during the festival time. Oh, I love that. Oh my gosh. And so and the ranchers are totally a part of this. This is maybe the other part of the transaction. They actually, like, each one of them receives a bat. Like you know, one of the best bats from the previous, you know, festival, I don't know, for rearing or whatever. And then they get to fly on it, you know, and do all of the taste testing and the festival stuff. I love it. Yeah. Oh, it's fucking great.
Yeah. And it's not just the fastest person. You have to be fast. You have to know, you know, be sure footed, but also it's a matter of luck because you might just get fucked by a banana peel.
Because you're slipping on banana peels constantly.
Exactly.
That's so fucking good, dude. Holy shit. A banana peel foot race.
Yep.
What the hell? Yep. I love Halloween. All right. We should probably do our one in ones. By the way, so this is not going to be a one-on-one, but I figure I just will throw it out there. We don't have time to come up with a name for this right now, but we'll do that off air, and I'll just add it to the podcast description. So if you want to know what this town is called, just check there, and we can we'll get it put in there. Do you have any ones? I guess you kind of just did a one. Yeah. That one doesn't count though, because that was just part of the festivals. Yeah.
So you go first. Let me think.
Okay. I think that last idea actually just gave me some additional thoughts of like, I want to see what the reciprocation is. So obviously the ranchers, you know, the orchardists need to sell their presence in the, you know, to the ranchers. I'd be curious to see what the ranchers are doing to sort of invert it. Like, are they gifting giant bats to people, like occasionally when there's sort of a like twice a generation kind of deal that's being made? Or is it, yeah, like what kind of gifts are they, what incentive are they providing the orchardists to make the deals with them? Maybe they have their own kind of thing going on during, I just want to know what they're providing during the festival.
Maybe a bat show.
Bat acrobatics.
There you go.
They wear some sort of like light up shit, like you know, maybe it's coral, bioluminescent coral stuff, and they'll do like a whole like air show where they're doing like flips and stuff flying through the air. I fucking love it. Oh my god, that's very good. Do you have one?
I do. So there's one farm, Frank. It's among the smallest, but it's legendary because while mm-hmm. they maybe only have a few acres, they have the largest trees.
They're the Ferraris of banana wine, bespoke banana wine bottles, but it is truly artisanal.
And what they're famous for, Frank, is the largest bananas. Massive, ooh. Massive bananas.
like porno size bananas.
Yeah. I'm talking like I think they may be at one festival like famous for having like a 6-foot banana.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's like that scene from The Lord of the Rings and The Return of the King where all the hobbits return and they're just like sitting in the bar, and then like that guy comes in with his giant pumpkin and he's like, hey, look at this pumpkin, it's fucking huge, right? And everyone's like, yeah. Oh yeah, such a great pumpkin. And they're like, what the fuck is going on?
I would love to see some like bananas that are like 5 feet tall. That's great.
Yep.
Huge ancient banana trees, maybe like the so the stories go that like it was basically blessed by whatever the god is of their town. Maybe the children of this family like regularly become clergy or something, and you know, to sort of maintain the favor that they have. I love it. That's good. What a ridiculous town. Everything banana related.
You were resistant to the banana for the beginning, but you've come to love it.
I've come to accept it, and also quietly in my mind recognize that there are other things that they're growing aside from bananas. It's just probably like 60 to 70% bananas.
Yeah.
How many times do you think we said that word this episode?
Probably a lot.
Probably over a couple hundred times. Okay, well, I think we should probably call it, yeah?
Thanks for letting us be your escape. If you forgot your worries and maybe want some bananas.
See, I could really go for a banana now.
We're on every podcasting service known to humankind.
We have frozen ones. Maybe I'll make myself a banana smoothie. Ooh. Oh, shit. That could be good.
Don't be greedy. Share your banana smoothies with your friends.
Did we discuss something that was confusing as hell? Of course we did. We always do. But chances are that there's some context in the podcast description, so you can go there. You can also explore the subreddit or reach us at the Lorekeepers on Twitter or email us at lorekeeperspodcast@gmail.com for questions or things you'd like to hear in future episodes. Recently got a question in. I don't think we'll be discussing it proper on this episode, but we might bring it up in the future about some ideas for things with some Orun Outriders. So we just sent them a little kind of some of our thoughts. Also, I will say on the Twitter recently.
On the Twitter recently.
Oh, yes. Batchy yes, milk on the, here.
On the Twitter. There was a... Oh, who was it? I think it was Thurston, actually, who like shout out to us that... It was just Rakvar Iulia OTP ? I was like, ah, oh, fuck. So I think Rakvar, we're gonna have to do that at some point.
He's not a Nazi.
No, I mean that was what I said. Is I was like, I was like, I don't know if he would date a Nazi, and I think they're just saying like, surely there's got to be some interactions though between the Marian Dominion and the Eldian Imperio, and I think that absolutely did happen.
Definitely,
and because Rakvar was basically running the Eldian Imperio for a while, kind of from the shadows, but like was a big figure. I would be curious to see what shit he got into with those elves. I am very curious. I think we're going to have to do an episode about that. So,
all right.
Yeah.
But thanks to Josh Silker for his composition of Land of Heroes, the Lore Keeper's theme. Also, thank you to Sam Wade for the album art, looking as good as ever, and still doesn't have her Instagram on this fucking document.
You can find her at @bysamwade on Instagram.
All right.
Until next time, don't forget, there are always more bananas to unpeel.
There you go.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. You have you tried out the Hearthstone killer at all? What is it called? It's the Steam one.
Steam.
The Valve one, I mean.
I don't know the Valve one.
It's the one that was designed by Richard Garfield, or at least he stepped in to assist with it, and then they did the Anthem thing of it, and now they're basically shutting down any further development on it, and I don't know. Anyways.
I'm not aware of this.
I've heard that Runeterra is good. I would try it out if I didn't spend all my time playing Hearthstone instead.
And just drinking cold.
Drinking cold? Uh-oh.
I'm waiting for a noun.
I ruined my camera, didn't I?
You did.
I'm a frozen.
And not even the Disney kind.
Got it. I fixed it.
Hello.
And Maisie's, of course, at the door meowing.
It wouldn't be a podcast without her.
Or maybe rather, it wouldn't be a podcast with her. And so she needs to, yeah. Yeah.
One of the two. Hard to say.
Oh, anyways. Yeah, no, Legends of Runeterra is cool. I there was actually a period recently where I was straying from the Hearthstone flock. I was starting to look at other card game women. Yeah,
it's
starting
scamp.
To get a little frisky. yeah, it just wasn't like as exciting as it used to be. You know, some of the spark had gone from the Hearthstone relationship, and And then Hearthstone realized it's you know, where it was, and realized it needed to change and grow as and be a better card game. Have you heard about what they're doing now?
No.
So they, first of all, they added a new mode recently called Duels. So it's now up to like, I think, 5 or 6 modes, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But which is it's an interesting thing, but it's not enough to save the game by itself. Not that the game is really unhealthy or anything. It's just like it's gotten old after a while. What they're doing is they are replacing the entire basic or the classic set with a core set. So every year, like Magic, the core set of cards is going to rotate out. So instead of being the same old cards that basically haven't seen play since the first year that they were released, some of them,
yep,
and then others being these staples that we always go to, they are, I think, only about 40% of the basic set are actually sticking around, and it's the most interesting 40%, and they're bringing back some classics from like other metas, and bringing them back into the fold. They're also introducing, I think it's like 30 completely new cards to the core set. And every year at the beginning of a rotation, they're going to rotate all these cards. It's not ever going to be probably this dramatic again, but they are going to change the core set, which is really cool. Plus, they're going to give the core set to every player for free.
That's good.
So like, the entirety of like, it's like a base of 200 and I think it's like 230 or so cards that are completely free to every player. And that includes all the legendaries, all the epics, all the rares and stuff. It's like awesome because it completely obliterates that barrier of like entry of I have to craft this ancient card that sucks and nobody enjoys playing it. And obviously people still have to pay a ton to, you know, it's like $80 to get all of the cards that are currently meta standard for each expansion. But like, yeah, the fact that you don't have to craft anything from the core set anymore is really cool. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's stuff like that. Plus they're adding a new mode called Forged in the Barrens. It's called like Mercenaries or something. And apparently it's like a roguelike. Like it's something completely different. People were trying to say it was going to be like Slay the Spire. And they're like, actually, nah, it's not really going to be like Slay the Spire, although it's definitely using some of that inspiration. So I don't know. There's exciting stuff happening. New expansion, rotating stuff out. They're also creating a, what is it called? Legacy mode or something where it's called Hearthstone Classic, and it's a format where it's all of the cards that have been unnerfed, and the only ones that are available is the ones that are out when the game initially came out as its own siloed mode, so that you can play, like, you know, it's like WoW Classic. They're like doing the same thing, which I think is very fun. I don't think it's going to be, it's nice that it's there, but I mean I don't know. I guess some people have been really like egging to play like that version of Hearthstone or something. I don't know. I just appreciate that they're doing this significant of changes, though.
Yeah, I think that it's good to change the game every now and then. And, you know, that's one of the things that keeps me coming back to League of Legends is that, like, you know, this last season, or I should say this last preseason, they changed up all how the items work and changed.
Oh, really?
A great deal of items. Oh, yeah. And League of Legends, yeah. So basically, there used to be just like items. And now there's mythic items and legendary items. And you can only ever have one mythic item. And the mythic item has a passive that applies to every other item you have. For example, like if it's some mythic items are like you get 5 ability haste per every other item you've built.
Okay.
And that's typically the form it takes. Where it's like, you get X stat from the other ones. And so, it's just, it's interesting to, that changed up a lot, how a lot of people build, because suddenly, you know, if you needed only a little bit of ability haste, you don't have to go after a specific item for it. You build a mythic that'll just, you know, give you ability haste by building other items.
Okay.
Something like this.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, it's really... I think that is actually one of those things where it's like, if you stripped away all of the toxicity of League and just looked at what's cool about the game and the format, what I like about a game like that, and a lot of these forever games, the ones that people like, basically they might not play any other game and they just play this one game, is that oftentimes they become platforms unto themselves. It makes me think of the way that people treat D&D, where it's just like, you know, a good DM, I feel like, I mean, maybe this isn't, I don't want to make a sweeping statement about this, but I feel like the best DMs that I think of, or the people that I've played with, are ones where they're willing to accept rule changes, like even on an almost session by session basis, if it's about fixing and making sure that things are more fun. You know, like there's so many different versions of 5e, you know, any D&D really, I mean, any platform that's like generic fantasy, but the fact that it's treating it not just like one singular game, but like this platform where you can plug in anything to it, and it like very much changes the way, the attitude of things. And I feel like League, tell me if I'm wrong on that, but I feel like games like League are kind of like that, where because they're willing to change everything. I mean, the heroes don't look the same year to year, let alone like 5 years ago. You know, there are entire eras of like, it just completely revolutionized. And that's just the heroes, let alone like all the mechanics surrounding the game of like how, you know, mobs work and stuff like that. Yeah, any game that approaches things that way is, I think, it is setting itself up for longevity in a way that others aren't.
Yeah, I think so.
Honestly, it's one of the reasons why I think that No Man's Sky has thrived, like, even though it's never had that big of a community. It's because they see it as a platform for which they can release more and more content, which is just cool.
I wanted to also mention what I like about lore in response to your Hearthstone stuff, which is...
Lore? What do you mean by lore? You Legend, mean like lore Legends of League of or something?
It's lore.
Hmm. Gotcha.
Just like LOL is League of Legends.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Runeterra, wait, is that also Riot? Is that their card game?
Yeah, it's also Riot.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure if they were doing a different one, but that is, okay, cool. Yeah.
Legends of Runeterra is in League lore. It's made by Riot. So yeah, you should feel just as bad for playing either one of them because it's published by Riot Games. Which is, I think, owned by Tencent, so.
I mean, not like I'd feel any better about playing a game made by Ubisoft.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all, or Blizzard, you know. Yeah. Yeah, seriously. Blizzard used to be like the Apple.
They used
to
be shiny, and now they're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But just like
every now they're just a branch of Activision.
Yep, just like every other games company. But lore, so lore has, they have an arena mode like Hearthstone's Arena, which they call expeditions, where, you know, you go about, and when you go on an expedition, you know, you do the deck making thing.
Sure. Similar, it's like a drafting, it's like a drafting-esque mode.
Yeah, it's
mode.
A drafting-esque mode. And what's one thing I like about it is that they pretty regularly give you tokens to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you go on an expedition, you get two goes.
Two goes? Like, what do you mean by that?
You get two runs.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Which is nice.
Yeah, no, that is nice.
They have another game mode called the Gauntlet, which is like a rotating week by week or bi-weekly game mode where they just have like gimmicks for you to like build a deck for. And
like, oh, is it like Tavern Brawl, where it's just like every week they just have a completely different rule set?
Something like, yeah.
Like, hey, you pick a class, you get a random set of cards, and then the other set of cards, like the other half of your cards are all hallucinations, which are one mana, like this is an example of a Tavern Brawl in Hearthstone, where you get hallucinations are a card that costs one mana and say discover a card from your opponent's spell class. And so like, it's just like half the time you're playing cards that are from their deck. I ended up building something that was like a viable, you know, strategy based on just discovering cards from their deck, which was kind of fun. Yeah, I don't know, stuff like that. But like then the next week it's, hey, this is a boss battle where the two of us are going to have to work together to defeat a boss that keeps on changing sides and we can only attack it.
That might be closer to Labs. So that's the third game mode.
That's okay.
You know, not just regular game playing games like ranked, which mm-hmm. is Labs is basically they just have different things that are just like fun little
wild shit. Those are great. They're also great just because it gives the developers of both games an excuse to just like try out weird exactly. shit that yeah. then maybe becomes a mechanic in a later.
Like they're doing in Labs right now a two-headed giant.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Wait, cool. So you can actually play with other players.
Yeah.
How does that work? Okay, how does that actually work in terms of the board? Because for the longest time, that is something that Hearthstone has not tried. Partially because do you just have the same?
You have this
like sized field, and like you have this. Is there a limit on the number of minions that you can have?
Six.
Out? Six. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is the same the true in two headed?
Yep. Okay. You share the same board, and basically, how lore works. Another thing I like about it is that cards have different speeds, and if you play a card that is slow or fast, those are for spells, I guess, and then any creature. That ends your turn, and mm-hmm. then it goes to the next person. However, there's turns and rounds, basically. And so maybe we should say, when you play something, it ends your turn, goes to the next person. And then when they play something, it ends their turn. And one of you will have an attack token that round, which means only they can attack, unless the other opponent plays something called Rally, which gives them an attack token.
Huh.
Yeah, and so every other round, you can attack.
But there's... Interesting. So you don't get to attack at the end of your... Or, like, during your turn?
It's, only if you have an attack token.
Huh.
Which you get
every That's interesting.
Other. Yeah, and so I think that's an interesting mechanic that is missing.
Well, it sounds like it's healthy, which is good. And also, any competition is... I mean... Bring it on. You know, Hearthstone needs good incentive to keep on being, you know, innovative, especially because Team 5 is, I think, doing a good job with the game. But like, And also the game is healthier than I think it's ever been. They're like, they've done 15 balance changes over the last year, or maybe it was even like 30. It was like more than once a month. They were changing the and that is something that they like didn't want to do initially, because they're like, oh well, it's really confusing if people returning players like come to their collections and they see that all the cards have changed. It's like, well, no. No, you just, I mean, because they just have a prompt at the beginning that says, hey, this card has changed its value or whatever. It's text. It did this and now it does this. And, but yeah, like they're a lot more willing to make things. They're actually unnerfing some of the things that they nerfed into the ground when the game began for Wild. So for instance, I don't know if you've ever played how long?
I played Hearthstone at the beginning.
Okay. So you might remember that Starving Buzzard was a hunter card. It was a 2-mana 2/1, I think, or 2-mana 3/2 that said whenever you play a beast, draw a card. It became,
yes.
It became a 5-mana 3/2 that became whenever you summon a beast, draw a card. And it basically nerfed it into oblivion. Nobody ever played it again. They're reverting it now, because it's not going to be part of the core set, and the power level of Wild has gotten so high that like even in its unnerfed state, people are like, well, it might see play, which I think is so cool, because they didn't do that for years. Undertaker is going back to whenever you play a death rattle, gain +1/+1, and again, that might not be strong enough to face like current Hearthstone standards. I just appreciate though that they're like looking at literally the oldest fucking cards and are willing to draw like pull back on things that, you know, previously they said they were never going to do, because they're like, well, you know, we're learning.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite things about lore is just the passing back and forth of actions, where it's like, you know, you play something, your opponent gets to play something.
Yeah, it does sound really interesting.
Yeah, and so really, it like, the worst feeling I have when I'm playing a card game is when I'm sitting there watching my opponent play like 100 cards, and
You know,
it's like when I'm playing Magic,
playing solitaire.
It's like, yeah,
and they're playing solitaire.
They're playing some blue shit where they're just like, you know, getting extra turns, and I'm just sitting here being like, dude, am I gonna get to play? Am I like checking my watch?
It's like I know I'm gonna lose, but can I at least play?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like they're starting to get going, and I'm like, I might be able to stop them if I get a turn.
That is, I know that that's also something that's a serious issue with Yu-Gi-Oh! Not that I've ever played it, but like just that people that I have, friends of mine who have played Yu-Gi-Oh! Know or have explained it as like, first of all, sometimes the text is like tiny, 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 tiny.
Oh, yeah.
And secondly, oftentimes good play, and maybe this isn't true, maybe this was true as of a couple years ago and they've gotten it better, but like it sounds like it's like, you kind of just lay out a mat of cards of just like, this one lets me play these two, which lets me pull these three from the deck, and these play over here. And you just kind of lay out a mat, and then the other person also lays out their mat. And it's just whoever has the more complex coding that allows them to actually win directly wins. It's like, that's not engaging at all to me. It's what's fun about that is the building of the deck and trying to come up with a really good situation. And so it sounds like all the fun that you're having is when you're sitting alone like at your computer screen, like putting together all the cards, and then like, you know, when you actually sit down to play, it's like, here's what I came up with, and the other's like, oh, that's interesting, here's what I came up with, let's compare notes, and then you just like go through and try and figure out who wins. And sometimes I feel like Magic can be like that too, not as horribly, but there's definitely times when that happens.
Yep, I agree. Though when I played Yu-Gi-Oh, it wasn't like that, but I was also a child, and that was 10 years ago.
Yeah,
at least might be 13 years ago. But in any case, yeah, the things I like about lore is I'm big into League of Legends lore.
Sure,
I like some of the mechanics.
LORE, League of Legends lore,
something like that.
Right. Is that, that's what you're saying? You're distinguishing between that and LOR. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I like the how they split up different like styles of play, or you know, like colors and Magic. They do it by region, which is cool.
Not like plane of existence, but by region?
Yeah, regions of Runeterra. So, like, Ionia is a country or a continent, and it has its own style of play. And then there's, like, a Noxus, which is this, like, you know, super cutthroat.
Is this supposed to be, like, a steampunky Victorianville?
No, no, that's Piltover.
Okay.
Piltover and Zaun, which is like steampunk, very nice, fancy Victorian shit. And then like the terrible fallout of having that actually be a thing is like, you know, the slums beneath it. Like terrible chemical spills. And it's like,
great. Sure.
That's its own region. And yeah, Noxus is like super, what do they call it? It's what America, well, not really. Well, it's kind of similar to America, but so is Demacia. It's the powers that like go to other countries and they're like, oh yeah, this is our land now.
What like imperialism?
Yeah, it's very imperialist, very expansionist.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, very violent. That's Noxus. And then Demacia is like very small, very like super anti-magic though. They like if they find any wizards, they like put them in jail because they're like no.
Okay, sure. There. Sort of the Templar model.
Yeah.
Now, okay. Question: is Runeterra? Because I know. Tell me if I'm wrong on this, but I think League has sort of the overstory of it is that there is like multiple planes that kind of have a planeswalky thing where is it that like gods are summoning these heroes to win battles for them or something like that?
Oh, you mean like the why League of Legends is actually a thing, the game?
Well, like because it takes place across multiple planes of existence, right? It's not just one. Oh, it's all just one world, just one reality.
Runeterra.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, and it all happens on this Runeterra planet.
Yes. Though technically speaking, there is the void, but we never get to see what the void looks like. Okay. Creatures come from the void.
Do people get summoned, or is it like a, or is it just that they show up?
Do you mean like in the like? Are you trying to like say is League of Legends a thing in world, like in lore?
Well, yeah. Starting with that, obviously. I mean, is it like Overwatch, where it's just kind of like shrug? I mean, you know, the gameplay is the only thing that's not canon because obviously it's not. But like, are these fights present at all? Like, no. We're like, okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
There,
but the characters are have it their used own lore to be and stuff.
It used to be old lore, ancient old lore that's been replaced. Was like, yes, we were summoners that were all in the Institute of War, and we like summoned heroes, and the heroes knew they were being summoned, and it was like weird. But they changed all that now.
They changed all that?
Yeah.
So what is the underpinning lore of like these characters interacting with each other? Is it just sort of the passive interactions that they would have because they know each other, have their own stories and their own orbits?
Yeah. And I mean, in lore, they've interacted quite a lot. Like, for example, one of the new champions, maybe last year.
I'm sure they interact a ton. Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's like,
without question,
there is Lucian, who's this like cool dual pistol, like, you know, guy. And he had a wife, Senna, who was captured by Thresh. And all three of those are champions.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, of course. I wasn't sure if there was a like what the underpinnings of sort of, I don't know, like at least if, I mean, yeah, it sounds like they started with a lore and then were like, yeah, this doesn't really suit us, which is fine. Like, you don't really need that. I think like a good example to me is like that in Hearthstone, it's that Hearthstone is a game that exists in the world of World of Warcraft, and it is literally your character is sitting down at an inn and playing a magical card game with other players that have like tiny versions of the cards, or like tiny versions of like actual famous figures or whatever, and they do different things. Like, that's fun to me. But
yeah, I think it's very much similar to Overwatch, and that like obviously none of the fights that happen in Overwatch ever actually happen.
Right. Yeah. No. Of course. You don't have seven Genjis going up off against seven.
Maze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, Winston working with the very emo, intense skull guy.
A Reaper?
Reaper, yes.
Yeah. I was going to say like Death Reaper, but no, that's just...
He's a very sensitive boy.
Troy wears a mask.
Yeah.
It's to avoid the allergies. Fall up all on